Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Friends, we got a good one for you today. No Doug Norrie, just Adam Armbrecht at the helm. We shed a tear in sorrow, but we forge ahead. And we also shed another tear as the Brooklyn Nets lose against the Chicago Bulls on Sunday. We'll cover the game. We'll break down some of the key sequences that maybe gave the Nets a chance to come back late in this one. But ultimately, it was about the starting rotation for Brooklyn and maybe the decision of Steve Nash and this coaching staff that I certainly had my questions about. And Doug Norrie, if he was here, would not be pleased. But before we do get into that, we'll also update injury news. There's a couple more potential little tweaks from some of the backup and role players in this one. But then Kevin Durant, Steve Nash came out with a definitively ambiguous possible statement about the return of Kevin Durant this week. So we'll cover that a little bit. We'll dive in on the Chicago game. We'll think about the back-to-back against the Knicks here on Monday night. But before we do any of that, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team. It's every day. Over there is not Douglas Norrie, owner and operator of DFSR, but over here is Adam Armbrecht. You know me, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, and also the voice covering the New York Football Giants on the One Giant podcast. You're hearing this on Monday. I'm telling it to you on a Sunday. Early afternoon game for the Brooklyn Nets, 2 o'clock start time on the East Coast, taking on the Chicago Bulls, where ultimately they fall 115-107. And this was one that they never really had much of a grip on from the very start of it. And we're going to get into some of the key sequences. We'll highlight some of the players. There was no James Harden in this one, still nursing the hamstring injury. But it looks like, again, that's a cautious situation, and they're just hedging their bets. This is the front of a back-to-back that'll have the New York Knicks here on Monday night. And then the other piece of it, because we'll get into the game, some of the key sequences, what happened late, some still opportunities for, as maybe disjointed as this game felt overall for Brooklyn, there were some sequences that still left the window open. They maybe could have made a late run. Ultimately, they weren't able to. The other injury update, the biggest injury update, is something that Doug and I obviously talked about last week, thinking about the timeline for Kevin Durant. When can we expect him to return? And now we find out there's a high probability that Kevin Durant will return to the court at some point this week. Now, this is Steve Nash when asked, obviously, quoting him here. I am not certain on Monday. I think it's an outside possibility, but I also couldn't say that he's in any stretch probable for Monday. Brief pause here. If that's not the sweetest Brooklyn Nets jargon for talking about injury updates and expectations for when guys are going to return. It's possible. I wouldn't say it's probable. There's a chance. But don't count all your chickens before they come home to roost, I think is how the saying goes. Nash went on to say, I think it is just a wait and see, but it does look positive that this week sometime there's a high probability he can return. So again, for whatever that's worth, whatever you want to take out of it, the Nets are always going to be cautious, not only with their injuries, but also cautious in the way that they communicate about said injuries. So there's all of the hedging of the bets there, but it at least seems like there is a chance here. If not against the Knicks on Monday night, then you get the Pelicans on Wednesday. And then the last game of the week will be on Saturday against the injury-riddled LA Lakers. So when you look at it from that standpoint, there's only going to probably, if we want to use Nash's terms here, it's probably one of two games, the Wednesday night game or that Saturday game against the Lakers, if there's a chance to see him back on the court, Kevin Durant, that is. And when you go back, and just to, you know, refresh everyone's mind, the hamstring injury that he suffered was initially considered to be minor, and that's why it was. We'll just be precautious. Obviously, we know the major injury he was coming off of coming into this season, and we know that the Nets were cautious around that as well. But Durant did say on Thursday this past week, initially, I didn't think it was that bad, just a regular strain. Then we got the second scan. They said it was a little bit deeper than that. It was one of those things where I'm not feeling a ton of pain, but you don't want to force one of these injuries and make it worse. By the way, we had mentioned this the last time where Doug was saying multiple hamstring, another hamstring injury. He was referring to my brother who went down protecting his kid, though. So you got to give him that. A bike injury. Maybe we'll get into it later in the episode and really flesh it out. But the reason why I bring it up is not dissimilarly, my brother said, you don't feel, you know, hamstring strains, partial tears. It's not walk around pain, but it's the idea of what you can do to it if you continue to overstrain it, right? If you continue to try to utilize it, especially when you're talking about playing in an NBA game, you overextend on a play, you land awkwardly, and all of a sudden the strain does become a partial tear, a full tear, and then the injury obviously exacerbates itself. So, you know, we've said this before, I don't want to beat a dead horse. I'm fine with the Brooklyn Nets being cautious around their injuries. That's a good thing. I applaud them for doing that. I don't love, as Doug has said, the caginess with which they communicate it. And then ultimately, just in this particular instance, I don't love not knowing when Kevin Durant's officially going to be back on the court, because we just want to see what this team looks like. And that's a theme around this game, as we got our first sample size with LaMarcus Aldridge and with Blake Griffin on the floor together, both starting in this lineup. We'll get into those details as well. Also inside of this game, though, from an injury standpoint, had a fan ask me over on Twitter, at what point can we expect TLC to just get buried on this bench? And my initial take was, once everybody's healthy, right? Because you'll start to see Bruce Brown settle into more of his guard role as opposed to getting utilized as a pseudo five at times. And then everyone can kind of settle in behind KD and Kyrie and Harden. And then, unfortunately, a non-contact Tyler Johnson coming back up the court on defense in the second half, he all of a sudden just kind of starts to labor a little bit, and then he goes down following the ball getting out of bounds. He just goes right down, needs to get helped off the court. He walks back to the locker room unassisted, just kind of laboring a little bit, favoring, I think it's his right knee that looked like he suffered an injury there. As we always say, non-contact injuries are always more concerning than ones where you bang bodies or you hit a knee against knee or something like that, where you say, okay, you can kind of see it. Maybe it's going to be a soreness. When it's non-contact, you're concerned that something's happened inside of the knee that is going to require an MRI, and then maybe going to require a little bit more work, a little deeper check. So, you know, Tyler Johnson, who going back to last year's bubble, has done such a 180 on, I think, you know, at least on our podcast and probably for a lot of Nets fans, in terms of what his value has been. He's now been a very focused, high energy on both ends of the floor. I think his defense, he's taken a lot of charges, took some in this game as well. He's looked strong in the role that he's now carved out behind a big three talented roster like this. So losing him is not insignificant, because he's been steadily carving out a bigger and more prominent and specific role for himself. We'll see how it plays out. Obviously, coming out of the game, nothing yet, so we'll update you during this week as more information becomes available. Then you got Shamet, another guy who was finally starting to get into his rhythm. He suffers another little ankle tweak here in this one. That's what he was nursing prior to getting back onto the court, so you hate to see him re-aggravate that. We'll update you there as well. That one maybe seemed a little bit less severe. He did come immediately out of the game after it, but he was trying to walk it off, jog it off around the court. And again, because of the state of the game, easier to pull him out and not worry about maybe further aggravating it. But now you get two more players. There's even a sequence here where Kyrie Irving tries to save a ball from going out of bounds and ends up almost catching himself on dividers, off the sideline there, catches his knee a little bit. He looks like he maybe tweaks a little something. So as you get the exciting news that Kevin Durant might be back, all of a sudden, left, right, and center, guys start getting chipped up, dinged up, concerns all over the place. So we'll see how those updates come. But this has kind of been the theme for the Nets all year long. Every time you get one or two players back, it seems like another guy goes down. Now, obviously, there's a hierarchy of Kevin Durant, Harden, Kyrie Irving. Then you go Joe Harris, right? There's specific players that you want to have healthy and have them healthy at the most important times. But these role guys are important. Back to that question of TLC. Well, maybe he's not going to go away so soon. If you end up losing some Tyler Johnson minutes, if you end up losing some minutes again here from Shamet, now you're going to have to start to flex and figure out how do you manufacture some of these minute shares. Will Bruce Brown get a little increase there? It's tricky because now you have these other bodies like Blake Griffin. Obviously, Jeff Green, he had a little injury concern throughout the year. He had a great game in this one. He was part of the reason why they had a chance late. So, you know, balancing the books, it's going to be hard for the Brooklyn Nets to finally get the best version sample size of their team. And that's the only tricky thing here. you know, we've said as long as they're healthy by the time we get down the home stretch. But now you add in LaMarcus Aldridge. Now you add in Blake Griffin. And you just want to see how these guys get their rhythm. Nicholas Claxton, young player. He doesn't get a big run here. DeAndre Jordan looks like he's going to be out of the rotation. Okay, that's fine. But what is the supporting cast? Who are the guards that are going to feather between Harden and Kyrie as they get on and off the court together? What's the best combination amongst some of these other players that were, and this is what we're going, this is a big theme of this episode, but you can't do that unless you have everybody healthy. So we'll keep an eye on it. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. And again, the big news is, fingers crossed, Kevin Durant back on the floor this week. And if all indications are correct, you could see him back on the floor with Harden and with Kyrie Irving. So we'll at least get the big three back on the court together. All right, we're going to talk about all these things that happened here, the start of this game, the initial starting lineup, some questions there, and really how this one got away from the Nets pretty early in spite of some runs, as the NBA is built on, where they were able to give you hope for a moment and ultimately dashed at the side. But before we do that, I got to tell you about BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. MLB is just around the corner. It's not around the corner. This is the corner. We're on the corner. Now we're walking down the block with MLB, so that's up and running too. Real-time updates, odds, and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. You can head over to the website and use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Also got to remind you guys that to get all the sports news that you need, in under 20 minutes, you got to be listening to the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski, friend of the show, updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of all of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. Okay. So this game gets underway, obviously. It's Chicago. They're on a six-game losing streak. They've made some moves. The trade deadline, they brought in Vucevic. He's been a Nets problem over the years in his time in Orlando. They bring in Tice from Boston. They have a familiar face in Thaddeus Young, who's a one-time Net as well. So you get out there, and the first thing you see is the starting rotation. The starting lineup ends up being LaMarcus Aldridge getting his second start for the Brooklyn Nets. Blake Griffin gets inserted into this starting lineup. And then you have Bruce Brown and Kyrie Irving in the backcourt, obviously, along with Joe Harris there at the forward. On paper, as I'll communicate some of the thoughts that Doug was able to share with me from afar, hated the MLA Blake Griffin lineup, which kind of got killed. That's the first thought that we bring to you from the mind of Doug Norrie. And, you know, this speaks to, as we talked about this last week in different scenarios, what do we think the coaching staff is trying to accomplish? What are they looking at? What are they hoping to see, right? What's the agenda in some of these games, especially in the absence of now Harden, in the absence of KD? Maybe you're trying to play a little bit. However, and it can be misleading because overall in this game, Aldridge and Griffin, at one point, they were 8 of 15. Now, they end up only playing 22 minutes for Griffin, 26 for Aldridge, again, because of the way the game flow kind of ends up here. But the 8 of 15 shooting is a little misleading. They only finished 9 of 19 combined, for whatever that's worth, so they cool off there. But it's also a lot of interior stuff. You know, this is Blake Griffin down on the low block, backing himself in. And yes, some of those shots fall, and yes, it looks pretty good. But what's happening on the other possessions? The other possessions are where LaMarcus Aldridge, and we know about the liability on the defensive end that we can get into here, actually was mildly optimistic at the start that Aldridge is a bigger guy. Vucevic is not necessarily the most athletic big in the game, so maybe he'd be able to stay in front of him a little bit. Vucevic ends up having a very solid performance in this one. But Blake and Aldridge are not, they're older, right? They're on the back end of things. They're not the most athletic. they're not the best at getting out at the top and setting screens to create openings for other players. So even though you're getting a lot of this in at the basket kind of looks, and the stats are piling up for you, one thing that we don't like to lean too heavily on, and it's again, but this sample size that we're talking about is basically when all the starters are on the floor together, you've got Aldridge playing to a -9, you've got Griffin playing to a -10. Now, obviously, because you're trailing in this one, and Kyrie Irving had a subpar game, 12 of 27 when it's all said and done. Couldn't find his rhythm from the outside either. But it ends up creating a rhythm that you can't rely on with consistency throughout the game. Because as you start to try to feed in Griffin, as Aldridge is playing inside of the paint, well, now the defense can sag away from that. Griffin goes 1 of 4 from the perimeter. And we've seen him knock down some triples since coming over to Brooklyn, but that's not his game. He's a streaky, at best, three-point shooter. So now the defense starts to sag on the inside. Once you start to clog and congest that up, now how are you finding your outlet passes? And we saw Aldridge display this in the game last week, kicking it outside and finding some rhythm shooters. But that didn't really happen here. Overall, the Nets weren't shooting well from the field to start this game either, so that doesn't help you. But it's just a little bit tricky when you look at this lineup, and we can give you a layer deeper here in a second, but when you look at this lineup and you think about trying to create balance from the starting unit to the second unit, putting together a combination of your least athletic 4 and 5 combo that you could have on the court feels like a recipe for disaster. Doug mentioned it last week about second DNP for Jordan in this one, but about how Jordan is better suited to be playing with Harden in his style of game. So we won't know for sure because Harden hasn't been playing. And you can say that maybe it's a better version with Aldridge and Kyrie Irving based on Kyrie Irving's style. But when you put both those players out there, you're basically creating the same deficiencies. And especially on the defensive end, perimeter defense, stepping out, right? Extending defense out to the perimeter. That's not going to be an option for them, or it's going to be a failing option. And that's how Vucevic, who can shoot from the outside if he wants to, and then also drive in on the paint, that's how you're going to create those problems for yourself. And then when you talk about switches even, now you're having a harder time on switches defensively, and now those mismatches start to come with even more relative ease. The other piece for me, though, is the Bruce Brown component. I love Bruce Brown. Brooklyn Nets fans love Bruce Brown. But if it was me inside of this starting lineup, even if you want to go with Aldridge and Griffin, okay, fine. But then at that point, I'm probably going to go to a Tyler Johnson maybe in the backcourt with Kyrie Irving, a Shamet. I might put him back there because of his perimeter shooting, because now your rotation looks like, okay, Aldridge and Griffin, and we know what they are, and you're surrounding them with Kyrie Irving at the point, and then two perimeter shooters with Harris and with Shamet. Even if it's Tyler Johnson, we mentioned at the top highlighting his injury. He's a guy that can do a little bit of both on each end of the floor. And it's harder for Bruce Brown to be ultra effective on the offensive glass, getting some extra rebounds, getting on the inside and the defensive end as well, because now when you have Blake and you have LaMarcus Aldridge out there, that is their role. They're going to be in the paint congesting things. They're going to be getting those rebounds, especially on the defensive end. So you're diminishing a little bit of the value of Bruce Brown. He's not a shooter. He's a guy in the paint. And that's not nearly as easy to accomplish because you're not getting out and running with as much ease with, that's more specifically Aldridge. Griffin can get out and run, but Aldridge isn't going to necessarily, he's going to slow you down. You're playing incredibly slow minutes when you have both those guys in the lineup. And that played itself out over the course of the start of this game. The pace was slow. The rhythm was clunky. And ultimately, it's only a 3-point deficit when you're coming out of the first quarter. The Nets get outscored 32-18 in that second quarter alone. They go to the half down 11, and it really just, again, it just begs the question: is the coaching staff experimenting with things because there's new players, or did they think that this was the best way to approach this matchup? Because if that's the case, then on paper, I think that was a mistake. And I think that the combinations that you go with were a mistake as well. So I personally, and it's easy to look back at the stat line here in this one and say, well, Jeff Green went 7 of 12 and 4 of 6 from deep, with 21 points in this game. And he did a lot of that damage in the fourth quarter. And there's stretches here where he had an opportunity for a comeback overall. But just think about it. Go back and take a look at it. If you take out Blake Griffin and put in Jeff Green, he's another more consistent perimeter shooter for this team. He is another more athletic four that can set better screens, roll to the basket. He had another Uncle Jeff. I mean, I don't know. We got to lower his age. This is prime Jeff Green career. Worked his way through the lane, switched his approach on attack, avoiding Thaddeus Young to throw through a monster jam. That athleticism, that versatility, we keep talking about it in support of your key players, your superstars. I know there's only one in Kyrie Irving here, but even furthering that point, in support of Kyrie Irving, the better version of the starting lineup involves a Jeff Green. I'm not going to say that Nicholas Claxton needs to be out there, but we're going to get into that piece here in a minute about how these rotations looked and where you had a little bit of a better run over the course of the second quarter, and then even into the second half as well. So we're going to touch on some of that too. It's a little bit frustrating. I don't want to call this a throwaway game, but in the absence, again, on the first of a back-to-back, in the absence of James Harden, I can live with the idea that that's what it was. I don't love it, and I don't think it was the right decision. So we'll dive in on the other side of this, which is the second unit, and that specifically is talking about Claxton and Jeff Green and some of these, the bench players, and how they looked when they got on the court and how it started to change, at least for a little while, the game script here, and maybe gave us a sample size that we thought the Nets could build on in this one before ultimately it all just falls apart. But before we do, gotta tell you guys about our friends at Built Bar. The madness that was the Built Bar Bracket Challenge comes to a conclusion. Was there any doubt that Coconut Brownie Chunk was going to bring down the house? What a darling, a dominant though. The Gonzaga, really. So saying a darling is the wrong term. That's the Gonzaga of the tournament. And this is what happens when you have so many great flavors. The guys on the Locked On Network were all in the private DM yelling at each other about who's the best, but this felt like your consensus winner. And that's because when you have a product like Built Bar that gives you delicious flavors like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, it's absolutely delicious and they're good for you. It's not that thing that tastes like a little bit of cardboard. It's got a great texture and a great flavor. And take a bar like peanut butter with just 19 grams, not just 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, just 5 grams of sugar and 5 grams of net carb. You can get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. And you can go over to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your next order. That's use promo code LOCKEDON20, just like the network we're on, for a 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And then, of course, got to remind you about our friends over at RockAuto.com. I like to consider myself a car guy. I'm not a car guy, but I like to consider myself a car guy. And that's why I love RockAuto.com, because whether I'm on the road or at home, I've got access. If I got a computer, I can get over to RockAuto.com and get all of the parts that I need without having to be the Rock Auto rock star of knowing every little detail about my car. That's what they're for. They can tell me everything that I need to know so that I get the right parts and at a great price. RockAuto.com is a family-run business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You go over to RockAuto.com and you can shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts and tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. And get a little fresh carpet in the car, why don't you? Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered right to your door. RockAuto.com's catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, the prices at RockAuto.com, they're always reliably low and the same that the professionals get and for you, the do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Why be concerned about whether or not the auto mechanic is giving you the real quote for the thing, the part, and the doohickey? No. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And when you get to that box where it says, "How did you hear about us?" just write in "Locked On," just like the network that you're listening to us on. Write that in the box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And then, of course, if you want to get more analysis of the top prospects available in this year's NBA draft, you got to be listening to the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. They've got scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of all that March Madness that's coming down to the wire here 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. You can follow the Locked On NBA Draft podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. All right. So now when we talk about the key sequences at the end of this game, and then ultimately the things that we saw in the second unit that should have been utilized more. By the end of this one, just to be clear, Claxton plays 8 minutes. At some point, I think that there has to be some conversation here around what's going on. You can say you're protecting the young player. You don't want him to get overextended. But when you go back to this game and you look in the second quarter and they get outscored 32-18, or when you go back to the first quarter and you think about the offense for Chicago and what they're able to accomplish, there's no way that you can look past the fact that Nick Claxton is your best defender at the 4-5 position. That being said, first off the bench here after that starting unit was Shamet in for Harris. So that ties back into the idea, why not have Shamet out there already though, have that real firepower, and then you could keep Harris on the court or Shamet and bring in Bruce Brown, vice versa, or Tyler Johnson, start to figure out a little bit of a different look where you still keep the balance in terms of who's going to be on the outside in support of Kyrie. This leads to, though, the TLC, Shamet, Johnson, Claxton, and Green lineup that comes in towards the end of the first quarter. They run for about five, almost 6 minutes from the end of the first quarter in through the second. And over that stretch, by the end of it, it's a 31-29 lead. So this unit, made up entirely of, you know, we're going to call them, quote, bench players, even though Green has had some starts along the way, but this is your bench unit. They stem the tide and really do a solid job for you on both ends of the floor. The offense is a little bit, you know, hit or miss, and that's okay. But you all of a sudden, or at least you should have all of a sudden noticed, the athleticism of Nicholas Claxton. There was a couple of sequences. He brings the ball up the floor. So he's able to obviously, you know, run the floor like a point guard, you know, within reason. But then he finds Jeff Green cutting through the lane and he gets an easy attack at the basket. That's because you have two athletic players and then you have these shooters around them that are spacing out the floor for you. There's also another sequence over that 5 or 6 minute run where Claxton on the offensive end, among three defensive players for Chicago, manages to get in there, tap the ball off of a defender, get it out of bounds, and extend an extra possession for the Brooklyn Nets. These are the things. Listen, I don't want this to be a one or the other, but these are the kind of plays that you see flash there where you start to say, okay, how do we get the value out of this? Because then it gets back over to the starting unit, and then you end up losing the quarter 32-18, and it's a bit of a disaster. So if you go back and you think about, and I know, as you said, mentioned Jeff Green's stat line at the top, but take out Blake Griffin and put Jeff Green into that starting rotation. He's a better perimeter shooter. He's a more athletic big. He can run the lane unlike Blake Griffin. He's not going down into the low block and trying to back a player down. And then on the perimeter, he sets better screens. And then defensively, you're more comfortable in switching scenarios that he can be able to help you, especially the idea of LMA and Blake versus putting Green there with Aldridge. Now you have a little bit better flexibility and coverage on those rotations as well. So that's the first thing that I would have done. And again, chicken or the egg, am I looking back and saying that now because we see how well Green shot? No, it's because I know coming into it that Jeff Green is a better shooter than Blake Griffin and that he creates more balance. Likewise, because I text a little bit with Doug about this, what would have been the better combination? And I think Doug's response was, well, any combination other than that would have been better. That's probably the first thing. And as he highlighted when we were talking about Green, you know, provides more spacing and he's really hoping that seeing this rotation again, because I'm just thinking back to any thoughts that I get from Doug I want to share with the world, but hoping that they don't see this look again of Aldridge and Griffin. So now we talk about the health, though, before we get into these final sequences. When this team is healthy, though, you immediately say, okay, we'll go ahead and put Kevin Durant out there on the floor. Aldridge will still be at the five, but now Griffin's on the bench. I don't automatically think that then Griffin's the first guy off the bench. It depends on who comes in to replace Aldridge. And something that we haven't seen so far, because there hasn't been the opportunity to do it, but it's hard to think it with 8 minutes from Nick Claxton in this one, But I do think that when Kevin Durant is healthy and back on this floor, if Aldridge starts, bringing in Claxton next off the bench to replace him and play at the five when Kevin Durant is still on the floor, that gives you the defensive upside, and then the offense works itself out. And it's not like Claxton is a zero on the offensive end. He's just going to fumble a little bit. His instincts aren't naturally there. He can get a little bit late out setting screens. But when you have Harden and Kyrie and KD on the floor, you don't really need to be overly concerned about that functionality so much as you need to be concerned about crashing the boards, maybe getting some easy lobs, and obviously extending some plays with some offensive rebounding. I don't see that being the case, by the way, because for whatever reason, they're safeguarding against the youth of Claxton and maybe being concerned about overwhelming him. And I can understand that. But I think that go back to this last week, sometime we talked to Matt Brooks. I posed the question, are Claxton and Jeff Green still the best four and five that you want for this roster in support of the big three? I think the answer is still yes. Whatever LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be, whatever Blake Griffin is going to be, and I've been happier with the returns, especially on Griffin because we've seen more of a sample size, I've been happy with what I've gotten from him. It doesn't mean that I want him in the starting rotation, though, and it doesn't mean that I even want him to be the first guy off the bench. I think the situational basketball and matchup-based basketball that we've talked about so much, we can continue to lean into that theory, but only if we see the Nets coaching staff actually execute the right rotations for the right matchups. And this just felt like a game, even just the Jeff Green piece in the starting lineup instead of Blake Griffin. That seems like the easy answer. Because now, if you think about it that way, you put Griffin into the second unit, even with Nicholas Claxton. Now, Claxton's athleticism on the defensive end safeguards against what Blake Griffin lacks. Now, Blake Griffin's at least moderate perimeter shooting, though not as good as a Jeff Green, but that helps safeguard against the defense collapsing into the paint because Aldridge isn't shooting from the perimeter either. So it feels somewhat obvious, and you can always say, from a high level, it feels obvious. Maybe there's some devil in the details, and I'll get into it with Doug on Tuesday, and we'll hear what his takeaways were, and they're not going to be great. He's not going to be glowing about this game. Hopefully, what happens against the Knicks will wash some of this away, but it'll be interesting to see, because when you think about the Knicks and the some of the players that you're going to put out there, like a Julius Randle, you know, how does LaMarcus Aldridge match up in that scenario? And what are these rotations going to look like if you still don't have Kevin Durant out there and if you don't have James Harden? So we'll see how that game plays out. The end sequences here really in this one that kind of put the nail in the coffin. So for as up and down and ugly as this was, the Nets played okay in the third quarter. Fourth quarter, they outscore Chicago 35-26. There's some dead minutes here at the back end of it as well. I think around the 3-minute mark, maybe a little bit less, they pull out Kyrie. But coming out of the timeout, at about the 3:30 mark when Kyrie was still in the game, it's a missed triple out of the timeout for Joe Harris that could have made it a 7-point game. Instead, you go back down the other way. It extends to 10. Green hits a three. They get a defensive stop. And Harris staying in the front of Satoransky down the baseline is actually how they get that stop. Forces him to take a little bit of jumper on the baseline. Satoransky had a decent game for himself. But an offensive rebound there led to a kick out and a LaVine triple. That pushed it back out to 10 at 112-102. Little over 140 mark or so. And the offensive end possession after that was basically just disjointed. It was a sloppy, disjointed possession that ended up with a Jeff Green jumper from just beyond the foul line. Didn't have any rhythm in it, and that was it. You get a foul there. Chicago goes to the line, knocks down a couple free throws, and spells the end of the game. So even for all of this, just as the overall view, even in all of this, the Brooklyn Nets still had a chance down the stretch here in the last 3 or 4 minutes to make a little bit of a run, and they ultimately can't get the job done. Now listen, silver lining here, if you want to go that route, is that the coaching staff is just trying to get sample sizes on LaMarcus Aldridge, on Blake Griffin, on the combination of those two players. And again, we can say, ugh, on paper, I wouldn't have liked that coming in. Well, now we know for sure that we don't like it. The question now again becomes, where does Jeff Green, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, how do those three specifically, I'm almost going to leave Claxton out of it because they are obviously doing something with him in terms of minutes, in terms of workload, etc. Maybe you're going to see a bunch of him against the Knicks, coming out of it, and we'll cover it in the post game when Doug and I get on after that one, where you get a bigger sample size in the back to back. But right now, you just have to think when KD comes back here healthy, it's going to be him, Green, Griffin, and Aldridge. How do those four guys combine to give you this version of the four and the five, this positionless basketball that is the right combination, both in the starting unit and then coming off the bench? So again, I'm going to give them that is the Brooklyn Nets coaching staff, just kind of a pass here and saying you're just experimenting, you're just having fun, because you can do that right now. But as we continue to say time and time again, I do want to get this 100% healthy, and maybe we're going to see it this week, or at least with the big three. I want the 100% healthy look at this roster for 3, 4, 5 games. Show me that sample size. Show me what the rotations look like, and then I can be at ease for the remainder of the season. But as it stands right now, every time I see something new or different, I can only analyze it and get a little bit nervous about what I'm seeing and about what it could mean for how the Nets want to approach the playoffs and these deep playoff runs. That being the case, we will be back in following the Knicks game. Doug Norrie will be back in following the Knicks game. So we'll break all that down for you. You can, of course, follow the podcast. Leave us the glowing 5-star review. Make a little comment. Say, you know, how charismatic Doug Norrie is. It really boosts his ego. And God knows that guy can get low sometimes. So help him boost his spirits a little bit. And of course, he's the one in pursuit. I like it too. 1,000 followers. We're inching ever so close, friends. Let's try to get that knocked out this week. By the way, he made the request, so this is a shame on you, the listeners, though we love and appreciate you. Doug Norrie said, get us to 1,000, and he would guarantee the victory against the Chicago Bulls on Sunday. We're at 995, I think, so we came up a little short, as did the Brooklyn Nets. We'll be back again talking all things Nets basketball. No quote today, because it's just me. So maybe 1 is the loneliest number that there's ever been. We'll be back again talking all things Brooklyn Nets basketball.